This is Digital Story Podcast number 1039, February 17th, 2026. Today's theme is sky replacement okay if it's your sky? I'm Derek Story. The Sky AI tool in Luminar Neo is so tempting to tap. With it, you can replace the drab no clouds background in your landscape pictures with any type of heavenly image. The question is, should you? I'll answer the question with another question. Is it okay if it's your sky you're using to replace it? I'll grapple with this nebulous issue in today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Sky replacement, boy, it's right up there. And one of the hot topics that we get, AI, of course, just in general, even things like, should you have a protection filter over your lens or not? I mean, these are all things, if you want to start a little verbal dust up in the workshop or hanging out with your photographer friends or at a user group, just tackle one of those topics and you'll certainly get the juices flowing. But I will say that today we are going to talk about it because I think we should, because it can be fun depending on your level of comfort. Now, we need to start out by setting a few ground rules. First, we're not talking about photojournalism here, documentation, or any type of realistic representation. In those instances, sky replacement is a no-no, as is really any other type of replacement. But what about our artistic endeavors? If the goal is to create a pleasing image that viewers respond to, is sky replacement still frowned upon? Indeed, this is a hazy area. And to puff up the issue even more, is it more acceptable if you use sky images that you personally photographed? So I'll give you a few minutes to mull over the options while I describe how Sky AI feature works in Luminar, which I think is the most fun way to do sky replacements. You can access this tool in the standalone version of the app or as an editing extension for photos. And of course, it plays nicely with Lightroom and other apps as well. So yes, Luminar for sky replacement, just because I think they do such a good job with the AI masking so that you don't even have to say the sky is here. It just knows where the sky should go or where the sky already is that you're going to replace. I think they give you an easy way to use, you know, their skies that they have available, and they have whole collections that you can download or purchase, and a whole bunch of them come with the application as well. Or you can add your own skies. And the other thing I want to mention is, and we'll be talking more about this on Wednesday in our online mobile workshop, is that Luminar Mobile also has this feature, which I just think is really cool to do it on an iPad. You don't even have to use a computer. So that's why I'm going to talk about Luminar, just because I think that it makes it easy to replace the skies, and it also makes it easy to adjust them so that they look as realistic as possible when you're done. And when I say realistic, I mean, you know, matching the rest of the composition, right? In terms of light angle and reflections and all that good stuff. How do you do it? Well, whether you're using Luminar as a photo extension or just doing standalone app, basically what you do is you go into edit mode, right? And normally when you open Luminar, it'll take it to its looks or presets. And the first thing I always do is just click over to edit mode because, you know, that's where I want to be. And Sky AI is near the top of the right-hand panel of tools. So they have, you know, the general enhance there, and you open enhance, and it also has sky enhance, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about replacing that just cloudless blue sky that we run into sometimes with something that's a little bit more interesting. So Sky AI is right below it. And so you click on that, And the first task is to choose what sky you want to use. And what I like about this is that you get little thumbnails of the different skies that are available. They have a bunch of them built in. And like I said, you can purchase collections of skies or you can add your own, which I'll talk about in a minute. When you just click on one of the thumbnails, it just does the replacement for you in real time. So you go, that one, no, maybe that one, you know. So you really get to play with the different ones. Now, they have a drop-down menu in there. And in that drop-down menu, I think the default is all skies. But if you click on all skies, you get a drop-down menu that has different categories. You know, so you get like blue skies or dramatic sky or sunset. So you get all those different, you know, if you know you're looking for something specific and you got a whole bunch of skies in there, that drop down could be handy. Once you choose one that you want to use, the app uses its intelligence to place it via a sophisticated mask that's really quite good in the proper area of the composition. You don't have to tell Luminar where the sky should go, it knows where to put the sky. At this point, you have all sorts of options. So it's not just like replacing an image, you know, replacing a solid blue sky with something that's more interesting and then you're done. That's just really the first step, because then you have other little goodies to play with, options like sky orientation. Let's say that you're bringing in, you know, a big sky. Right. And that's what I do. I just, when the sky is really beautiful, I just take sky shots just to have them. So you have a big sky, but let's say in your composition, the sky is only occupying 25% of the top of the frame. It's only going to be 25% of the big sky that you put in there is going to be used, but you can move what you placed in there. You can move it up and down, or you can move it horizontally. So that's pretty cool, so that you can get it, you know, exactly the way that you want. Also, if Luminar didn't do a good job on the mask, or there's a little something that didn't do quite the way you wanted, there is a mask refinement tool. Honestly, I have never had to use it, but it's there. There's a mask refinement tool. And then there's a scene relighting tool. And I think that's kind of neat, because again, what's happening in the sky does affect what's happening on the ground. And so this tool helps you sort of, you know, bring those two into alignment. And it even has a reflection tool, so that if you have a body of water like a lake, you can make sure that you get a realistic reflection of that sky that you put in there in the water. It's pretty neat. And then they have all sorts of adjustments for the sky itself. You can make it, you know, you can soften the sky a little bit. You can play with the color and the contrast a bit. There's all sorts of little things that you can do. So these tools are easy to use. They're super easy to use, but yet they're very powerful. And within just a minute or so, you really have changed your photograph. And it's so interesting how changing that sky, especially when it's just a solid blue sky, how changing that sky then suddenly just brings that photograph to life. It's really wonderful. If you've been collecting your own shots of interesting skies, I do this, those can be added here as well. And the way that you do that, remember that pop-up menu I was talking about in Sky AI? Well, you go all the way down to the bottom and you choose Show Custom Skies. And what will happen is when you choose that, it actually opens up a folder and you can just drag and drop the skies that you have, JPEGs. You can drag and drop those into that folder, and then now they become part of the menu options that are available to you. Skylum recommends that you limit your additions to 50 for performance reasons, you know, to ensure that you have good performance with the app. I do have more than 50 in there, not a ton more, but I probably have 70 or 80 in there. And on my MacBook Air M4, I haven't noticed any performance issues by having more than 50, but it is something to keep in mind depending on, you know, computing power that you have and all that kind of stuff. As I mentioned earlier, the difference really can be incredible. And the pictures I was working on recently that made me even think to do this show was that we had a really good shoot on our last Eastern Sierra workshop in October of 2025. We hit the color, had a beautiful time. It was bold and beautiful when we got there, but it hadn't gone past peak. And then it actually blossomed into peak while we were there. There was some snow up on the mountaintops. I mean, it was just gorgeous. We had blue skies and good light and all that stuff. And we had blue skies and blue skies. There were some days we got a little bit of cloud action there, but not much. And we were at altitude as well. And so, as you know, blue skies at altitude get very blue, especially if you're using a polarizer or anything, which I often do in this situation. So I had these gorgeous shots with fall foliage and craggy mountains and a little bit of snow and all that stuff, and then just solid blue sky after another. So I said, okay, look, I like these shots and I would like to like them even more. So I'm going to take a few of my favorites and I'm going to play with the sky replacement tool. And I have a bunch of my skies that I've photographed over the years loaded into Luminar. And I just start popping through them and, you know, playing with them and adjusting them and all that. My word, what a difference. And especially when you do the before and after. And in Luminar, you can do the before and after where it does a complete before and after, or you can have the sliding curtain before and after. I'll put a shot with the sliding curtain before and after in the show notes so that you can see one of these sky replacements that I did, both, you know, both the before side and the after side all in one shot. But man, did it change things. And I was able, like one of the shots was at Convict Lake, and which is one of my favorite places to photograph in the Eastern Sierra. And I even got some nice little reflection in the water and did some water enhancement and all that stuff. It was really, really fun. I'm kind of a fan of it. I know I'm tipping my hand a little early here because I haven't finished with my tips yet. But I only use my skies. I don't buy libraries, but I've been shooting skies for a long time. So it's not like I'm against libraries. I just have a bunch of them already. All the elements in the shot are mine. That's what I'm saying. All right. So if you find this interesting, I have a few suggestions for you. First, comb through your current library and gather up a collection of interesting skies to add to Luminar, or, you know, whatever app you use for this type of procedure. And what I did, you know, I usually, a lot of times, I'll just shoot my skies with the iPhone because, you know, I'm walking around and I go, oh my gosh, what a beautiful sky today. I'll take whatever shot I'm going to take that has a foreground in it and all that. But then I'll take one or two shots of just the sky with nothing but sky. And I do try to shoot from the horizon up or as close to the horizon as I can get, because as you know, that sky changes as it goes up in degrees, you know, from the horizon. So I do shoot as close to the horizon line as I can get away with without having a whole lot of foreground in it. And just take two or three shots. Just take and have them in there, right? And then you can go through your library and export a handful of them, 20, 30 of them, however many you have, and then dump them into Luminar, and then they'll be there for you waiting under the custom tab, and then you'll have access to them. Another reason why I'm talking about this today is because spring will be approaching before too long if you live north of the equator, and spring tends to be a really good time for big skies, for big, beautiful skies. Late winter, early spring, you know, and a lot of times all the way through spring into summer. And then things tend here anyway. I know it's different in different parts of North America and all that. But here in Northern California, once we hit summer, then we just get kind of solid blue again and not a whole lot of action in the sky. So we're coming into a time that's a good time to start recording skies as you see them. And, you know, so, you know, get that on your radar so you're thinking about it. And then the other thing I want to talk about, which is when you're actually using one of your skies is, you know, pay attention to all the photographic elements of your composition, you know, the direction of the light and all that kind of stuff. Try to pick a sky that has, you know, that same sort of directional lighting to it, or, you know, looks natural, and then use Luminar's tools to fine tune that so that you're not dropping in a sky that is a mismatch with the lighting in your foreground or with the rest of the shot. You know, try to match them up as well as you can. And it just makes a big difference. And a lot of times, honestly, if you do this part well, and it's not hard to do well, the app will really help you with it. People will not be able to tell that you used one of your skies to enhance that particular composition. Talking about all that now, so what's your verdict? What's your verdict? Are you like team no sky replacement no matter what? Are you team sky replacement, but it has to be your own sky? Or are you team sky replacement and I don't care where the sky comes from? So what I'll do the inner circle is I'm going to post a poll. You know, once this podcast is live, I'll post a poll in the inner circle and I'll let you guys vote, guys and gals. I'll let you vote on this. And then next week, I'll report the results from our inner circle poll and see what folks in our community say about this particular topic. As you know, you already know my vote. I'm pro sky replacement, as long as it's, you know, for artistic uses. And I prefer to use my own sky. It's fun stuff. It really is fun. Even if you're not really totally sold on doing it and you have Luminar, play around with it. I think you'll have a good time. We have some good news stories this week. I got three of them here for you. Let's start out with this article that's on Petapixel. I have a link in the show notes. AI has made it absurdly expensive to capture and store your photos. And this is interesting. You know, as we continue to debate the benefits and the liabilities of artificial intelligence, gobbling up resources is definitely one category. And when I say gobbling up resources, I mean using a lot of energy, right? Those data farms use a lot of energy. Okay, where does that come from? Are they taking away from something else? Are they using any sort of green energy for these things? You know, all of that. But the other resources are the actual chips themselves, right? The actual chip. So that's what this article touches on. I'm going to read a bit for you right now. Photographers are starting to see the real-world effects of big tech's bottomless hunger for AI innovation. Storage prices haven't been this high in years. There's a growing amount of chatter online about the cost of portable SSDs, the most popular way for photographers and videographers to store their photos and videos. I took a look at historical data for some popular SSD models, and it's pretty bleak. Everything is more expensive, but some prices have more than doubled versus just a year or two ago. The SanDisk portable SSD was cheaper back in 2023, just $55. Today, it costs $135. SanDisk recently launched a series of Bright Blue Creator products, which includes the 4TB Creator Pro portable SSD, which in January cost just $266. Today, just about a month later, it costs $589. Finally, SanDisk Professional 4TB Thunderbolt 3 portable SSD used to cost as little as $305. Today, it costs $500. Oh my gosh, those are some substantial numbers. I mean, this is like, you know, the eggs of photography, right? Let's go on. It gets worse. Not only are those desktop storage devices more expensive, but memory cards are too. Oh no, not memory cards. A SanDisk Extreme Pro 128GB SD card used to cost $90. Today, it is at its highest price on record at $190. A pro-grade digital 128GB SD card used to cost $85, but today it is listed for $170. It's the same story with the Lexar 128GB SD card, which was available for $85 but now costs $170. Why SSD and memory card prices won't come down anytime soon? First, the why. The cost of all these memory components are going up because the supply for actual dies that make up all types of SSDs is finite and being largely consumed by enterprise companies looking to expand AI data centers. These data centers need storage for two reasons. One, they need more data storage for reference and to train large language models. And two, they need more RAM to operate. The longer a conversation with an AI chatbot, the more memory is required to access earlier parts of that conversation. The type of memory needed for RAM and SSDs isn't the same, but these data centers need both, and they're buying up all the supply. Even when the AI bubble bursts, and it will burst, prices won't immediately fall. It'll take years for that to happen since the contracts to purchase all these products have already been signed. Just look at the last time computing prices went way up back in 2020 and 2021. Prices did not begin to stabilize for 2 or 3 years. All of the memory needs to be exhausted. The market needs to adjust for any changes, and then maybe prices will start to stabilize. But until then, as demand continues to rise and stock remains difficult to find, it's more likely that the problem is going to get worse before it gets better. If you were wondering why those prices have gone up, here's the explanation. The most disruptive photography company of 2025 isn't who you think. And this is an article on fstoppers.com. I have a link to it in the show notes. I'm going to read you a part of it. Photography in 2025 looks different from what it did even 5 years ago, and not just because of sensors, codecs, or computational tricks. I think the biggest shift has been economic. Here we go. See, we got a theme here going. For the first time in decades, access to truly capable photographic tools is no longer reserved for people with disposable income or institutional backing. That charge did not happen by accident, and we all know it didn't happen overnight like my clickbait title implies. It happened because companies like Viltrox decided to challenge the idea that quality photography gear has to be expensive or riddled with compromise. Viltrox earns my personal MVP label in 2025 because it has consistently delivered something the industry long failed to prioritize. High-performance, native-mount autofocus lenses at prices that ordinary people can actually afford. The kind of specs I would have drooled over 15 years ago in a camera shop that I couldn't afford to shop at, just not made by the big OEMs or industry players. I feel like this all started with the early waves of affordable Chinese-made manual focus lenses. I have owned dozens of them, and I still use some to this day. Like the 9mm Laowa 0D for Fuji X-mount in my real estate work. But it was Viltrox that really stepped up the game with production of multiple lens models in a variety of focal lengths with respectable aperture options with extremely usable native autofocus. They've been at it for a while now, and as of January 2026, the lineup has gotten impressive enough to me that I am willing to risk being called a shill because I think they have earned a shout out. These are not novelty optics or good for the money compromises. They are sharp, fast, well-built lenses with real autofocus support for modern mirrorless systems and often at a fraction of OEM pricing. Even Viltrox's own Air subcategory of lenses is an effort to make their own glass more affordable, and they offer multiple tiers for different budgets and applications. Here's how he wraps this up. Photography now competes with a flood of generative imagery. Gen AI can produce endless visuals, but it cannot replace lived experience, local perspective, or human intent. The best counterbalance to AI saturation is not regulation or outrage, it is participation. More cameras and more hands means more authentic work, more unexpected ideas and more images rooted in real places and real lives. I try hard not to go full Stan with any brand, but I know I am laying the glaze on here a little thick. But that has become increasingly difficult to avoid as I see young, previously priced out creatives benefit so much, not to mention myself, by lowering the financial barrier to entry without lowering the bar for quality. Companies like Viltrox are not just selling lenses. They are also investing in photography's future and making a lot of fans in the process. I have two Viltrox lenses. I have a wide angle lens with a nice fast aperture, a 20 millimeter. And then I also have their 85, I believe it's an F1.8. I can't remember if it's 1.7 or 1.8 that I use for my portrait work with a Nikon. And he's right. They're good lenses. They take really great pictures. When I first purchased the first lens, which was the wide angle, you know, I was going, okay, you know, how good is this going to be? How good is the mount going to be? How good is the focusing going to be? All that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I started looking at the pictures on the computer screen and going, this is a good lens. They're a really good lens. And that gave me enough confidence to spend, I think it was $459 for an 85 millimeter, let's just say F1.8 autofocus lens for my Nikon ZF. And I love that lens, and it's a great price. So I'm not going to say that Viltrox is, you know, the most disruptive photography company of 2025, as this author does, and the author is Robert Stevens. But I will say that I do agree with him. They have disrupted things, and they have made my life better, as well as many other photographers, especially those on a budget. Last thing I want to mention, and this is just a post on DP Review, for Micro Four Thirds fans, the OM3 Astro, OM Systems' classic body, gets a cosmic upgrade. And this is on DP Review. I have a link in the show notes. OM System has unveiled the OM3 Astro, an astrophotography focus variant of his OM3 mirrorless camera. The new model keeps the core specs and handling of the original OM3, but it adds an astro-oriented enhancements, including a modified IR cut filter and dedicated custom modes designed to make capturing the night sky easier and more effective. The primary upgrade for astrophotographies is the integrated IR cut filter in front of the sensor. OM System says that the dedicated filter is tuned for 100% transmission of hydrogen A wavelengths, making it more sensitive to the dim red light emitted by many nebula. This allows photographers to capture the colors of nebula more effectively than with standard cameras. Beyond the filter, OM System added additional features to streamline night sky photography. The camera includes new color profiles specifically designed for astrophotography, including one for photographing red nebula and one for nighttime landscapes. Additionally, a new pre-configured custom mode dedicated to astrophotography allows faster setup when using stacking modes or during handheld shooting. Like the base OM3 model and previous OM3 bodies, the Astro offers several tools that are ideal for astrophotographers. This includes Starry Sky AF, which lets users lock on the stars with autofocus instead of relying solely on manual focus. It offers stacking options, a night vision mode that adds a red overlay to the interface, and more. It also has a couple body mount filters for astrophotography. The light pollution suppression filter, as the name suggests, reduces the impact of artificial light to preserve nebula and constellation colors. The soft filter enhances point light sources, making small bright stars stand out more with a subtle glow. The OM System OM3 Astro will be available in March on a made-to-order basis for $2,500. The light pollution suppression filter and soft filter will be available in March for $340 and $230, respectively. All three products are available for pre-order now. I'm going to be really curious. I'm going to be on the lookout for when this thing hits the streets for some pictures created with it. If I see anything outstanding or if I see anything that's a beware, I'll follow up and let you know. But I think it's a pretty cool announcement. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I'm going to talk about a new workshop. And the reason why I'm talking about this, well, it's not new. I just haven't talked about it for a while. Because I finally have dates for the Hot Air Balloon Classic and Microbrewery Photography Workshop that's going to be in Sonoma County. I was waiting for the dates for the Hot Air Balloon Classic, and I now have them. They're doing it on Saturday, July 18th, and Sunday, July 19th. So then I could set the dates for our workshop. Yay! So the workshop is going to begin on Friday, July 17th, and end on end of day, Monday, July 20th. We'll go behind the scenes at the Balloon Classic. I've photographed this before, and I've many times actually, and I have even done a workshop way long time ago. We'll go behind the scenes at the Balloon Classic to see how these beautiful objects are designed, maintained, and piloted. We'll photograph the Dawn Patrol launch, the Big Bash, and even rise up in a hot air balloon if you want. They offer rides and go up in a hot air balloon and then shoot everything from above, which is just really a lot of fun, especially if you've never been in a hot air balloon before. We're also going to explore the vibrant microbrewery culture in Sonoma County, which is just crazy good. It's home for Russian River Brewery, which makes, you know, Piney the Elder and Piney the Young, Lagunitas, and more. And then, if you want, since you're already here, you can add on to your adventure. There are days and days of things to photograph here. The majestic redwoods, the rugged coast, the hillside vineyards. This just could be a wonderful getaway, producing a big variety of images and just a really nice time, really good time. And it's going to be based out of our TDS headquarters here in Santa Rosa. And if you can get a flight to Sonoma County Airport, it's in our backyard, that airport, which would make things super easy. Anyway, there's a link on the Nimble Photographer workshop page, and you can get to our workshops page either from the nimblephotographer.com or from the digitalstory.com. We have signups already, but we still have a few open seats, and you can reserve, put down a deposit and reserve your spot right now. July 17th through the 20th here in Sonoma County, the Hot Air Balloon Classic and Microbrewery Photography Workshop. What a good time that's going to be. I also want to mention an online workshop that we have coming up here in March, Becoming a More Creative Photographer. And this is going to be led by Rob Knight. And he had great success with this workshop last year. It begins on March 5th, 2026, and we have signups, of course, already, but we also have seats open. If you want to turn your focus away for a few minutes from equipment and focus on the creative process, the thinking behind being creative with your camera, this is a fantastic workshop for that. And again, you can sign up for it going to our workshops page. I have links to everything in our show notes as well. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community month in and month out. They get discounts on all these things that I'm talking about, these workshops that I'm talking about. And they have their own area, which is the area where I'm going to run this poll on sky replacement. You know, this is just, it's just fun. It's just fun. And for $5 a month, for Inner Circle membership, or $7 a month for Inner Circle Bold. And if you do a whole year at a time, you get a discount on that even. You can get that money back very quickly if you participate at all in our online or in-person workshops. And it's such a value. I mean, it's such a value, and this is such a good group. If you're interested in joining this group, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around a bit, sign up, and then you'll be hearing from me with all the goodies coming your way. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members who support us. And finally, a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These guys are the guys that make my inkjet printer sing. It sings because it has beautiful paper going through it. And I'm telling you, if you play around with and explore the different surfaces that are available for your photography printing, you will discover interpretations of your shots that you go, man, I never thought I could produce something like that. Sometimes it just requires taking that image, getting it off the computer screen, and putting it on some beautiful paper. And they can help you even choose the right paper for the look that you want. All that information is on their site. Now, to access it, all you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, the Red River paper tile. Start looking around a bit, order some paper, make sure you use our code for free shipping, and that'll be on the landing page when you click on the tile, and start interpreting your images in beautiful artistic ways. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.